Welcome to The Big Rich Show. This podcast will focus on conversations with friends and acquaintances within the four-wheel drive industry. Many of the people that I will be interviewing, you may know the name, you may know some of the history, but let's get in depth with these people and find out what truly makes them a four-wheel drive enthusiast. So now's the time to sit back, grab a cold one, and enjoy our conversation.
Whether you're crawling the Red Rocks of Moab or hauling your toys to the trail, Maxxis has the tires you can trust for performance and durability. Four wheels or two, Maxxis tires are the choice of champions because they know that whether for work or play, for fun or competition, Maxxis tires deliver. Choose Maxxis. Tread victoriously.
Why should you read Four Low Magazine? Because Four Low Magazine is about your lifestyle, the four-wheel drive adventure lifestyle that we all enjoy. Rock crawling, trail riding, event coverage, vehicle builds, and do-it-yourself tech all in a beautifully presented package. You won't find Four Low on the newsstand rack, so subscribe today and have it delivered to you. With last week's episode and this week's episode of Conversations with Big Rich, I'm trying something a little different. We are interviewing new competitors to WeRock. The idea behind this is to give other competitors or future competitors who may be our listeners a chance to hear what it's like from two guys that are just starting and what their experiences were and why they did it the way they did. So far this year with this podcast, we've been talking about the history of rock crawling and four-wheel drive motorsports. So we thought we'd change it up a little bit and discuss WeRock, rock crawling, and how we can help new competitors get started. That's the idea behind these two podcasts, last week's and this week. For more information on WeRock itself, you can go to werocklive.com. That's werocklive.com. We have rules for all of our classes. Plus, we have contact information for myself, the rule book, so that you can study the rules if you like. And just to let you know, your first time out, we suggest that you come to the judges' training sessions, which are typically Friday night and Saturday morning, and we'll post those specifically for each event, but it'll give you a chance to see what the judges are calling and how the event is actually scored. To give you an idea of what we do class-wise, we have three pro classes for buggies or vehicles, and we have three sportsman classes for buggies or vehicles. And we offer a UTV class and actually two youth classes for 5-year-old to 8-year-old and then 9 to 11-year-olds. The sportsman classes, starting with the smallest or least capable of the three classes, would be our Sportsman C. Sportsman C is more of a full body, 37-inch tire size maximum, and no rear steer, also like suspension on whatever the vehicle is being claimed to be. We have a Sportsman B class, which is a little more complicated because it can be basically our trail rig class, and you can go up to 40-inch tires on a single seat or 42s on a two-seater. And then we have our Sportsman A, which is an unlimited buggy, trail buggy class. It can be single seat or for a two-seat. It also allows rear steer, although you do get pointed as a penalty for using the rear steer on course. You only get the penalty once per course. And that's more of a strategy than it is anything else for that class. Then we get into our pro classes, and the pro classes are mod stock, which is a 37-inch and under tire size class, and it's a full body and like suspension class. Then we have our pro mod class, which is up to 40-inch tire, two-seat, front engine, no rear steer. And then we have our unlimited class, which anything goes. You do not get pointed for rear steer as a penalty in unlimited, but there is a penalty for using rear steer and the spotter rope on the same course. You can use one or the other without penalty. The sportsman classes run on what we call our C courses, and the C courses are tamer, but still a challenge even for those unlimited trail buggies. There's multiple lines and bonuses, so even if you're a sportsman C competitor on 37s, you may be running on the same course as a sportsman A, but you'll have lines designed for you to be able to get through, as well as lines available for those unlimited buggies. You can find videos of rock crawling on our YouTube channel, which is We Rock Live. We promise that if you come out the first time, we will treat you kindly and we won't kill you. I guarantee it. We've never done that yet in 20 years of rock crawling. So come on out, enjoy yourself, get to know everybody that's out there. The pros are more than happy to help the sportsmen. It's a way for them to get to know everybody and for yourself to get to know everybody. We camp on site at all of the events. So bring a motorhome, bring a tent, sleep in a race trailer, whatever you're comfortable doing. We always have porta potties on site, sometimes running water. I believe that you'll have a really good time, even if it's your first competition and you're worried about what's going to happen. Don't be. Come on out. Enjoy it. Look at the courses. Walk the courses. Talk to the pros. Talk to other sportsmen. And come out with a good attitude and enjoy yourself. It really is a great lifestyle. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Conversations with Big Rich. Today's guest is Jason Childs. He's a newer competitor, you would say, to rock crawling. He jumped right into the We Rock Unlimited class last year with a Jesse Haynes fabrication buggy. And we want to talk to him about his decision to jump in, not only to competitive rock crawling, but the highest class there is and the class with probably the toughest competition at the moment. So sit back and enjoy this. All right, Jason Childs, thank you so much for coming on board and being part of Conversations with Big Rich and maybe giving us a little bit different perspective on rock crawling, not so much from the history side of it, like guys that have been competing for 20 years or competed 20 years ago or so, but you know, basically a newbie's idea of rock crawling and what interest you had getting into it. So let's start at the very beginning and, you know, tell us where you're from, where you grew up, and how you got started.
Well, kind of started, as a kid, I was born in Sacramento. My dad had take me hunting every weekend, every day if he could, and that was our off-roading to start with. We deer hunted, drove around, hiked a billion miles, never really saw anything. But then as I grew up, I kind of moved all over. My family was heavy machinery mechanics, and they worked on the pipeline and big rigs at PACCAR and a few other places. So I ended up living in Fairbanks, Alaska, Puget Sound, Anacortes, Washington. I mean, pretty much everywhere that work took us. It was kind of like the military life.
Okay.
Ended up in NorCal because of the temperature. I mean, as my stepdad, my dad, or my basically my parents got a little older, the warmer temperature was easier for them to acclimate to. And that's kind of where we ended up. And it just stuck. So I had an old 43 Willys MB that I probably drove way too many places that I shouldn't have, beat it up for a while. And life kind of took its course and got away from it for a little bit and got a little older. And I wanted a Bronco. So I built a 72 Bronco and I put a fuel injected 5.0 in it and, you know, had some fun there. It was on 38 Swampers back then and had a good time. Then I was told that we wanted a house and I was like, you want a house? And I was told to sell it for the down payment. So that's where that went. And I got away from it for quite a while. Then kids, family, I was like, this is time. I have to get back out there and started looking around and was told no two doors, no stretches. No, I wanted a Samurai. I wanted a roller. I just wanted something to beat up on. Ended up with a four-door JK. So went and bought one of those and immediately started, you know, swapping stuff here and there. Went 60s in it, 40s, you know, all the, I'm sure this is going to get the JK guys going, you know, it's, but as I think few people know, it wasn't the traditional JK. And I kind of just beat on it like it was anything. And it just went from there and, you know, got the family into it. Everybody was kind of part of it. Some like it more than others, but as I progressed more and more and more, I wanted more and more and more. And to keep modifying the JK versus look around at something else was, it just didn't make sense. So in 2000, oh man, I don't even know what year it is right now. Stuck at home so long. 2017-ish, I believe, maybe 16. I started looking around and I saw a single seat rear steer buggy. And I was like, huh, that looks interesting. And I'd always want to get into rear steer and kind of mess around with it, learn it, because it just intrigued. I mean, as fun as it can be, it could get you in just as much trouble just as quick. And so actually I reached out and I ended up purchasing one of Jesse Haynes's old cars from that Matt Dees drove from Jeff Rowland and shipped it across and started just messing around with it. Oh, I had so much fun with that. And kind of out of the blue, I owned it for like 3 or 4 months. Out of the blue, someone reached out to me and was like, you want to sell your car? And I was like, no, I'm good. And they were like, what would it take? So I threw a number out there and, well, I'll be damned. He gave me 50% down and set up shipping and it was gone about a month later. So it was one of those where then I didn't know what I was going to do. And in between that time, I had it. And I actually think I ran into Matt Messer, I believe, from Trail Gear on the Rubicon. And he recognized the car instantly and came up and chatted with me for a little bit. And he goes, why don't you go to Supercrawl? I was like, what's Supercrawl? And so I got home and I looked it up and I was like, that looks amazing. But I don't know if I'm like what I should do. And so I started looking at the classes a little bit and comparing it to videos I saw. So, you know, they have some different classes. And I was like, you know what? If I'm going to do it, I'm just going to go out and have fun. So I did. I signed up for Unlimited. I had never competed before, never even seen a competition in person. And I showed up and went through it and I was like, wow, this is awesome. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Was that with the JK?
No, that was with the blue buggy. Yeah, before I sold it. So like right before I sold it, I took it to Supercrawl. Okay. I had actually met you just before that at Donner because I was going to try to make an event and so I brought it up to make sure it passed tech. And I remember I pulled up and you started laughing because apparently everybody knew this buggy. And
oh, yeah.
It was just one of those where I didn't know. I just wanted to make sure I didn't show up somewhere and they go, oh, no, you can't do that. You have to do this. But so I ended up going. That was when Supercrawl was in September, I believe.
Right.
And so I went there and didn't know anybody. Nobody. Had no idea what was going on. Just kind of stumbled through it. I remember going up the first day and I got paired in a group of 4 or 5, pull up and I'm first course spotter ride. Don't have any idea what's going on and kind of just start walking the course a little bit. And I remember actually Cody and Randall were right behind me. So they kind of just, hey, have any questions? You know, I probably looked like the tourist, you know, they were just like, hey, you probably knew. And so they kind of helped me out and gave me some pointers on little things here and there. And we had a great time. We did all right. It wasn't, spectacular. We didn't really have any expectations going in. And from that point on, I was like, this is awesome. I'm going to keep doing this as much as I can. And then I sold the car. So it was one of those where it was kind of a really wild ride at first. It was up, down, up, down. And I remember reaching out to Jesse and saying, hey, I want to make this change and this change and this change. And his only response was, do you really want to do all that work or would it be easier just to build something new? And I was like, I hate you, because I knew he was right. But I just don't have all the technical skills as far as fabrication that he does. So it was one of those where I'm looking at it, I can modify it fairly easily or not. And he was right. It boiled down to, it was probably better to start building another car. So I sold that, and that's where I put the money towards a new car. I was about 99% of the way through of building one of the two-seat chassis. And I mean, all the parts, everything, we were welding up the chassis, everything. It kind of really, I had plumbing and electrical once it all went together. And that's when the fire up in Paradise happened. And I lost it all. It was all up at a buddy's shop and unfortunately didn't make it. And so it was kind of one of those where back to square one again. And so I've been going to a couple events here and there and watching. I drove down to Baghdad, took some photos, just hung out and had a good time. And it was just one of those where maybe I learned something, maybe I didn't. I met some people. It was kind of just, I don't know, have, it was exciting and fun to me. So I just kept going, even though I didn't have a car. And the whole time I was kind of looking around for something and to buy. And everything was just out of my price range or wouldn't work. And I'd have to do what I was going to do with the first one, is modify and modify and modify. And Jesse reached out and said, hey, would you be interested in a roller? Or maybe, you know, I could do the chassis and axles. Can you have a place to put it? At that point, I was living in a fifth wheel RV in the back of friends' properties, kind of, because we couldn't go back to our house. And I was like, ah, I don't know if that, I said, yes, I do, but you know, I'm kind of stuck here. And so we started talking and he was like, hey, if you just come over every now and then and help out, you know, as much as you can. I have room in my shop. We can just slowly build it and go from there. And I was like, man, if you do that, that's amazing. Turns out I was living at his house just about every other week, it felt like, going back and forth. And then one day he walks in and goes, morning. I was like, morning. He goes, you want to make Donner? And I'm like, that's like 6 weeks away. This thing is still in pieces. And he was like, I think we could do it. Well, I'll be damned. Saturday morning at like 5 a.m, I pulled in the Donner. I wouldn't say it was done, but it was done enough to go, and it was good enough for me. It was, I had a blast, and I was so happy to get out and go back in there, even though we've been riddled with little things here and there and things that just, you know, could frustrate you, but I just love it. So I just want to keep going.
I did remember that the first year, 2019, was the first season.
Yeah.
And you guys had a lot of struggles with drivability. There just always seemed to be something that just wouldn't work for you. I really admired you for showing up and going through the motions, even though you knew it wasn't 100%, that there was things that just weren't going to allow it to perform the way you needed it to. So I was really impressed that you had the fortitude to hang in there and not just say, okay, I'm going to wait until it's perfect. You know, you don't learn by staying in the garage.
No,
yeah.
No, that was one of the driving factors for us, is like, for me, is I needed seat time. I know I needed, like, no matter what, even if the car is flawless, you need seat time. And I would rather, I mean, it sounds funny, I'd rather be able to work on it on the fly, because what if you do break something? You know, so I've got a lot of practice repairing that thing. So I know it very well, but there's been a couple constants, but it was tracking some of the stuff down that has just been probably the biggest hurdle. It was, you know, little things here and there with fluid leaking, or why does it keep dumping out of this? Or, you know, just the stalling. There's been a bunch of little things like that all kind of just encompass the whole experience. But there's nothing like getting on a course and at least driving it, understanding what's going on, because there's more to the car than the whole competition. And that took a long time to learn. I mean, spotter communication with the driver, understanding the car, time management. Oh man, there's been such a learning curve in so many different aspects that has, outside of even the car. So I figured it was always learning. No matter how good or bad it went, I was learning something.
And jumping right into
into the fire with both feet and going into the unlimited class, which is, you know, probably the stiffest competition out there. You're on the biggest courses with the biggest bonuses. You know, they're not necessarily easy. Some of our teams make them look really easy, but you know, it's not something that's to take lightly jumping into to begin with. What was your thought process in not going into sportsman, but jumping right into the unlimited class?
I've always been really competitive, whether it be, I played competitive baseball, blah, blah, you know, every sport, everybody has that story. I feel like if you put yourself against the best, even if you aren't the best, you're going to learn. They do things a specific way for a specific reason at a specific time. You may not understand it, but if you're on course and you see it, or you realize you're in the seat and you're like, man, that made total sense after the fact. Again, it's a learning experience. Nothing against sportsmen or any. Honestly, you could ask any of my friends. I'm just an idiot and I go full go. You know, it's one of those where it's just me. Like, the way I am, I'd rather be beat by the best every single time and learn, because learning to me is what is fun. Like, I love it. I don't like losing. No, don't get me wrong. But it's one of those where, like you said, the competition there, if you have everybody there, I mean, it's the best of the best. It doesn't matter what day it is. I mean, they still have to drive the same courses. There's always that same chance. They've got a ton more experience, but how am I going to build experience if I don't do it? So walking lines, you know, I might go out there and walk a course, drive it, and then I'll see a video or maybe talk to somebody about it. And they're like, why didn't you do this? Because it didn't even cross my mind, you know, and it's, right. That's where the experience is. It's one of those where, I don't know. It's, to me, I just want to get out there, have fun, do the best I can against the best, and learn from the best at the same time, whether they know it or not. You know, they're teaching me something every day, whether it's, I mean, it's kind of funny listening to Randall and Cody yell at each other on Facebook 2 days after the it's amazing, because you know what? There's probably something in there that I can learn from, whether it's spotter communication. You know what? I've done that 1,000 times. I've said that 1,000 times. I'm sorry. I'm doing, you know, it's like, it's just the self-reflecting or understanding of what's going on in the car, because sometimes emotion gets in the way and you just, because you are competitive, you want to do that. So to me, it may not have been the brightest decision, but I've had a ton of fun.
Good. I know that your spotter is not afraid to to tell you what she feels. Some of the things I've heard come out of Jill's mouth, I've turned around and went, yeah, girl, get it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's times where I'm not the nicest or probably the most concise person on the microphone. But hey, it's funny, because I think at the early stages, we would just not go at it, but just we were both frustrated because we're both competitive. But now it's like we can just get it out and say, this is what I need you to do. This is what I need you to do. And that's it. I mean, we've gotten very good about saying, you know what, that was A2, we're on to A3 or whatever it is. Like, we can't go back in time. And that was one of those lessons you learned. You know, it's like, do you let the first course of the day ruin your whole weekend? No. You know, you may be thinking about it. You may not, you just need to learn to let it go and move on to the next one. And that has been a huge thing for us.
Has Jill ever driven the car?
I don't think so. Well, I mean, little things here. Y'all, yeah, never mind. She did in Sand Hollow. Yeah, she did for a little bit. But that's kind of a funny story. She can't drive it the way she would because of the dimensions of the car. She literally has a hard time reaching the pedals. And it's one of those where, so she has to slouch more than normal, even though the car's set up that way, you know, to be lower. But it's, so in some situations, it's like she's trying to hold the brake and do this and do that. And like, you see her shifting in her seat. And so it's not anything else but that. On top of that, it's, we don't have a whole lot of runtime. We have been doing a lot of work to this thing or I should say, I have been doing a ton of work to this thing in between every competition, every chance I get. It's usually tore down and redone in some aspects. So there hasn't been a whole lot of, hey, let's go wheel it, you know, kind of thing. So
right.
And there's a combo of that.
And if she doesn't fit in it, then it's probably not a good idea to put her on anything really difficult so that she can get an idea how it feels for you inside the car. It's one of the things that I try to tell teams, especially new teams, is if the spotter can fit in the car, let the spotter drive the car, you know, even in practice or whatever, so they get a feel for what they're telling you and why they need to tell you that. Because if they don't, you know, there's some spotters out there that have been around the sport for so long, they don't need to know what the car does from driving it because they've seen it so much. You know, like Cody and Randall's, they've become a better team because Randall drove the car.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
You know, and so he knows what the car will do or what, you know, it's capable of doing. You know, that's why I asked.
We've definitely talked about it. It's just one of those where I think it boils down to a lot of times I'm working till the night before we leave, or, you know, we just haven't had the time to go out and play, to drive it, to, like, not even me. It's not even that. It's just, we've just been, I guess, handcuffed a little bit here and there with things that right. hasn't allowed us. So hopefully soon we'll get to, but I would love to have her in the car and at least understand, you know, the different things. Luckily, we spot each other quite a bit when we were wheel our JKs, so at least we understand each other a little more. Yeah. But when you start adding that rear steer and just the dimensions of that car, you know, the handling of that car is completely different. So it's definitely a good thing to do.
Yes. What are your plans? I know you're going to compete as often as you can. I understand that, but is there, it's not like you can move up a class or do something different. I mean, you're in a state-of-the-art vehicle. You're running in on the toughest courses in competition right now that are available to you. Is there things that you want to do? And I don't even know if this is a fair question because I don't know what else there is to do, but I'm trying to get an idea of what are future plans? Is it just to continue competing with us, or do you want to go fast someday? What are the things that, you know, what's in your interest bucket?
I honestly don't have any desire to go fast. I mean, I love it, but as a sport, I've joked about it a few times, like maybe possibly if I picked up a UTV and try that a little bit here and there, but just for that, no, I have no desire to really go that direction. I have so much to learn going slow. It's, you know, it's one of those where I don't need to jump in and learn a whole nother thing. To me, I have so much to learn. Even though I might be in quote unquote the unlimited class, I'm a beginner. I'm trying to learn. I ask questions. You know, I'd rather focus on getting myself better there and doing better there. And maybe someday, you know, giving those guys up there at the top a hard time. You know, that's kind of the fun part of it, is I like joking with them and giving them a hard time about this new guy is going to do this and that. And, you know, it's all just me. Like, that's just me. But it doesn't mean I don't want to, you know, but right. I'm so far from it that I have a lot to learn. So I just don't want to go jumping sports and doing more and trying to do more when the ceiling's not even close to me. Like, so I'm going to stick to it. I'm going to keep going, go to as many events as I can. Maybe someday if I get myself in a position where I can, you know, join some of the Midwest, East Coast, whatever you want to call them, events, that would be great. But right now I'm just going to stick to the West Coast stuff and see where it goes.
Excellent. Excellent. Anything that, that you want to talk about that we haven't talked about? Have you tried getting to the point where you can get marketing partners on board? Have you looked for quote unquote sponsors or marketing partners yet?
I haven't. I joke about it a lot. I'm kind of split. So I've kind of been in that arena in other sports, and I've talked to some of the guys that are in that, you know, in this sport now. And luckily I'm in a spot where I can make it to every event and still pay for it myself. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's one of those where, but at the same time I have the freedom. So right. It's like, and I always hear, well, just be careful to do this, watch out for, like, everybody's always on the, it's great if you can find the right one. So I'm kind of in that spot where, am I opposed to it? No. Am I out there searching for it? No. You know, kind of thing. So it's just one of those where I'm not opposed to it, but it's not the top of my list. Like, I know, again, I'm new. I'd rather go out and have a good time and focus on driving and focus on, you know, possibly podiuming, you know, kind of thing, and maybe putting some pressure on the guys up there and just having fun. I don't know.
Do you feel like you're starting to pick up the strategy? Because there's a lot more to it than just driving from the start gates to the finish gates and trying not to hit cones.
Oh yeah. That was I'll tell you what, the first time we went through stuff, I was like, ooh, let's do that. Oh, let's do that. Let's try that. I want to do that. I'd spend 8 minutes on one obstacle because that looked fun. That's a trail wheeler coming to a competition right there. So it's that was the toughest thing. Time management or the strategy piece of it is, you know, we've kind of developed our own way of looking at stuff. Okay, well, here's option A, B, whatever we want to do from if we make this gate, if we don't, if we end up over here, what's our angle over here? If we're not to this area by 4 minutes, let's do this, or, you know, whatever it might be. Every course is a little different, but we still aren't even close to some of the other guys, you know, like watching some of the stuff that they do. And again, it comes with experience, and that's where I'm lacking because I am new. So it's one of those where we come up with our game plan. I would say 9 times out of 10, we stick to all of it because we don't want to see something else and go, oh crap, let's change everything. Like as I'm getting in the car, like that's just not good for either one of us. But there are things that we see after the fact and we're like, that was really smart because this is why he did that, or this is what they did, you know, kind of things. And we're just learning. That's the whole thing. Is I think that's what makes it fun, is there's still so much to learn. And it's funny because I hear stories all the time. Oh, we did that in 06. We did that. And, you know, and I'm like, I've never done that, but, you know, kind of thing, or I've never tried that. And it's just understanding things for the first time. It may be second nature to somebody, but to me, it's not. And to go out and have fun and learn that, it's great. I have a great time. As much as I may yell and probably scream and get frustrated, 30 seconds later, I'm usually like, sweet, this was fun. You know, it's just, it's that emotion, like for that split second.
Right. I think you'll have fun with the next upcoming event for the West Coast because of this COVID. Of course, we had to eliminate Sand Hollow and then move Donner. We weren't sure if California was going to open up and allow us to use it. And I didn't want to make that change, you know, 2 weeks before the event. So Cedar City said, you know, come on out. And everybody seems to really enjoy Cedar. I'm going to open it up and use some terrain that we haven't used in the past, or haven't used in a long time, I should say. So that time when the, you know, somebody goes, like, especially at Donner, oh, we used that in 06, or we did this, we did that. You know, there's only so many lines you can do in a place, but You may have the same rock that you're on, but the cone placement really does make it a lot different. And those guys, you know, Cody will tell you that, Jesse will tell you that. It's like in the shootout there in Baghdad, when Cody was trying to get that last bonus on gate 4.
Yeah.
And he ended up rolling it, and he was like, man, you don't ever have to put that gate in again. You know, use that spot. And I said, why? It was the same as last year. And he goes, no, it was like 18 inches over, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. And, you know, just that 18 inches made a huge difference.
I was so looking forward to that. Was the only gate I wanted to run, and I made a stupid driving mistake and broke, you know, after gate 2. But, you know, it was one of those where I was just happy to be close, you know, kind of thing. But I had a great time with that. But I have to say that was the game. I almost was like, just leave it up. Let me go drive it. But obviously with three wheels, it wasn't going to work. So.
No, three wheels would not have been good up there.
Well, that's what I asked when I was still on the course. I said, is it just the hub? Or is it just the cage? If it's still around the I said, I'll try it in three wheel. And they were just like, no, don't. It's just drive off the course. And I was like, fine. So that's when I made the decision that it was probably the smart decision to drive off the course.
Exactly. You know, getting into the shootout is a big step, you know, in any of our competitions. So, you know, congratulations on doing that. Anything else you want to discuss that you haven't discussed? I liked your perspective on why you jumped into the pro unlimited class instead of going into sportsman first. I understand why guys go into sportsman. I'm always really surprised when we get somebody that comes out for the first time and jumps right into the unlimited. I had a couple of guys in Baghdad that, you know, first looked at the courses and like, well, I'm a sportsman A. Does that mean I get to run the big courses? I said, no, you have to run unlimited to get on those big courses. And they made the decision not to, which was probably good. Not that they couldn't drive it. I mean, they're used to driving the big stuff in Arizona and Utah and everywhere else they wheel, but it is a lot different when you put cones and a crowd out there than it is trail wheeling when you get to pick your own line.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's one of those where I'd never been in front of a crowd, never been in front of any type of that. And then now you're going to put a time limit, cones, points, someone yelling cone. Well, like, I'm in there going, what the hell? Like, how did I hit that? You know? And I had to stop to not focus on what I just did and, you know, just keep moving forward and keep focusing. And I don't feel like I would have had that pressure on myself, whether it's good or bad pressure in sportsman. Maybe right. I would have, maybe I wouldn't. I just don't know. But to me, to learn from the best, to see the best, compete against the best, like that's fun to me. Like it kind of reminded me of skydiving. Like that was, there's very, very similar things with this is that was one of the only sports I'd ever experienced where I had, you know, a couple hundred jumps, but I was up competing against the best in the world. You know, it's because they didn't care. It was just one of those where if you wanted to enter, if you, you know, met the requirements, you're good to go. So it was just, that's just what it's always been. So it's to come over here and see this. And it was just like, sure, you can go straight to unlimited. We don't recommend it. Sure. Why not? You know, what's the worst that could happen?
Okay. So help me out here. I did not know that skydiving was a competitive thing, except that you want to make sure you get to the ground with your chute open. I knew that they have like landing contests where you try to hit the mark, you know, kind of like shooting for the bullseye and darts. Is there some other aspect to it that I don't know about?
Oh yeah. They have competitions all over. Nationals is actually held in Eloy, Arizona at Skydive, Arizona. And they have, so there's different formations. So you could have four way. So there's four people, you know, on a team plus a videographer, and they do a random draw of what they call a dive pool. So there's so many, I don't know what it's up to now. I think it was like 18 different formations for letters. So the letters are numbers, and they reach in and they randomly draw these and they give them to you the night before for that day. And you can go through and, you know, for the next day's jumps, and it's everybody goes out and does the same jump and it's the highest score. So you have to do it cleanly and, you know, by a certain time frame. So they bring you up a certain altitude and then you fall down to usually, I think it's 45 seconds, which is 15 seconds longer than a normal skydive. So you have plenty of time to get separation. And then they add up the point, and at the end, they average them, and the highest average wins. And they have, what is it? Intermediate, advanced, and open. So those are all the levels. So you can do whatever you want as far as that. But then there's also 8-way, 10-way, there's 16-way, like there's vertical, so basically head down, or they call it free flying, and you can do the same thing with 2-way, 4-way, 8-way kind of thing. They have all these different styles, and some people compete in multiple, some people specialize, but as long as you have 200 skydives, you meet your safety requirements, you could join whatever you want and do whatever you want. So you can compete against somebody with 25,000 skydives that does this for a living kind of thing. So
wow. That's not something I would do. First of all, I never really want to jump out of a perfectly good airplane. You know, my time window to try that passed, you know, years ago, when I had a kind of a death wish. And then, you know, I've had a couple of friends pass away in smaller planes. So I'm not a real big fan of, you know, anything less than like a jetliner. And so getting in, and if I got into a jetliner and they handed me a parachute, I'd probably turn around and go back out.
I'll tell you what, that's the best stories ever right there. Because when you travel, you keep your gear with you. And because you can pass them through TSA and everything. And a lot of times we'll put them in these special, they're called rig sleeves or a bag, kind of, just because you don't want people to ask questions. But there's sometimes where you just don't have anything. So you just put it on your back and walk in and you're in line and someone's like, this is a parachute? Yeah. And they're like, why do you have that? Well, you upgraded to first class. This is what I chose. You know, you can just start messing with people. You get so many questions. It's kind of funny, but usually you try to conceal it because there actually are people that do, when they see it, they're like, huh, why does he have that? You know, kind of thing. So
he gets one of those. Maybe I need one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, wait a minute. Where did you get that?
Yeah. If I ever see one of those pilots that's like transferring from, you know, one spot to go get into another plane somewhere else. Yeah. You know, and if I ever see one of those guys carrying a parachute, I am definitely getting off. I'm like, time out. Yeah. Get that jetway back over here. I don't even want to go down the stairs.
Well, back in, I think even the 90s, Paris Valley in Southern California, you used to be able to jump out of the 737. They had a rear, I think it was a 737. They had the rear exit where they could drop the cargo door, but right from the cabin. So, and it was just like getting sucked out of a vacuum. Boom. You just watch people disappear because they can't, like, they're slowing down to basically stall to let people out. And it's still way higher than you're used to in some of your other planes. It's kind of funny.
So kind of like that, the guy that hijacked the airplane up in Washington, or wherever it was, and then jumped out in Washington. They still ain't found the guy.
D.B. Cooper?
Yeah, D.B. Cooper. There you go.
Every skydiver knows that story.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Jason, thank you very much for coming on and sharing your insights with us. Is there somebody that you want to see interviewed at some point? I've got a list of like 174 names right now. I'm going to be doing these for at least like 3 years now, or at least releasing them. I've already got like 26 interviews in, and we've only released 4. Is there anybody out there that you particularly would want to hear from about the history of rock crawling or off, you know, four-wheel drive, off-road, trail wheeling, or anything like that?
I don't know. You probably have on your list, man. You probably have them on the list already. It's kind of funny because I've heard a lot from Jesse, honestly, just from being over there asking questions about, and it was kind of funny listening to you tell the story and just kind of comparing back and forth. You know, everybody's got their own viewpoint on different things. So it was kind of funny there because it was all new to me. I don't know as far as that. I think a fun one would be Tacoma. I think listening to Tacoma would be pretty funny, interviewing him. But I think just because he sees it from a different perspective. I know he's been part of it. I know he's wheeled and all, you know. But I think as of late, he sees it from a completely different perspective than any competitor does, kind of thing. Which, plus he gets the crowd and, you know, other stuff too. But I don't know. I think that'd be interesting because I know he's been around for a little bit.
That's a good perspective because I don't have Tacoma on the list for this.
So, man, out of 107, I found somebody that wasn't on the list.
You found somebody that wasn't on the list already. Yeah, that's fun. That's pretty good. All right, well, thank you for taking the time, and we will see you hopefully in Cedar City. I don't know when this is going to air, so people might have said, hey, did you ever see him in Cedar City? But anyway, you know, it is what it is, and thank you, Jason, for coming on board and spending some time with us.
Thank you very much. All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a rating. Share some feedback with us via Facebook or Instagram, and share our link among your friends who might be like-minded. Well, that brings this episode to an end. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll catch you next week with Conversations with Big Rich. Thank you very much.